morning, Africa. Welcome to the Everett Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali's military government postpones election schedule for next February.
I think the Malian government came to the conclusion that they can't organize elections because half of the territory is occupied by the rebels.
Nigerian President Tinubu orders the rescue of kidnapped female students. Uganda opposition leader Bobi Wine calls on the international community to stand with the people of Uganda. Liberia holds a rice production symposium. Zambian police warn a former president against jogging in public.
The truth of the matter is that Hagainde Hichilema is spending sleepless nights over the name of Edgar Chagwalungu. Hagainde Hichilema is paranoid.
And Mercy Corps and rural Kenyans joined to combat the impact of climate change. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A political analyst says the decision by Mali's military government to postpone democratic elections is a worrying development because the junta does not say when those elections will be held. The junta announced late Monday that it was postponing the February 24 polls in part because of a dispute with a French-based technology company that manufactures an identification system over unpaid bill. Political analyst Ibrahim Akan tells me that the delay may be because the junta has lost control of a large part of the country.
I think the Malian government came to the conclusion that they can't organize elections because half of the territory is occupied by the rebels. Any election that you organize without including that part of the territory, it means that you accept that that is no longer part of your country. You know, cities of Gao and Tombuctu these days are completely blocked by the rebel. Even plane cannot go in those cities because they will be shut down. Two planes were shut down. So I think the security problem is explaining the decision. But what is worrying is that that decision came without telling us when will be the next date. It seems to mean that it's indefinitely postponed, and which is really worrisome. And I don't know what ECOWAS can do in this particular context, because any kind of sanction will be meaningless for ECOWAS.
Talking about ECOWAS, do you think that the way ECOWAS dealt with the coup in Niger and Guinea has emboldened the military leaders to continue the way they are going?
Well, I think on Niger, the way ECOWAS tried to deal with the situation has put ECOWAS in a difficult position because now they can't go for military action. They are still negotiating, but the negotiations are so too long to really finalize any agreement. And without that agreement, ECOWAS cannot move towards the next stage. What can you say against other states where your conversation with Niger is not yet conclusive? That's the dilemma that ECOWAS is now in.
Let's talk about the representation of these military leaders at the just concluded United Nations General Assembly. What do you make of the way Guinea represented, I would say, the military leaders in West Africa?
They're taking advantage of the new context of international relation. The context being that now countries are trying to tell to the northern parts of the world that they need to respect them, they need to take them seriously, and we need to have a more democratic relationship at the international level. So they're taking advantage of that particular context to now promote themselves, because what the president of Guinea did is just to tell Europeans that the way that you are trying to put that in democracy is not our way. And it's a joke, because at the same time, these are the same people who will be talking to ECOWAS about how to organize elections, how to have a new constitution, which are the different aspects of the democratic system that they are trying to build in Guinea.
So it seems to me West Africa should expect, or Africa should expect, that these military leaders might stay around for a long time.
If ECOWAS failed to deal with the situation in Niger, Because if they deal with the situation in Niger in a more effective way, it will be change of rhetoric in the other three countries. Definitely, yes.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu has ordered security forces to rescue an unspecified number of female students being held by armed kidnappers following an attack last Friday. The incident is the latest in an escalating wave of violence targeting schools in northern Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu reports from the capital, Abuja.
President Bola Tinubu's directive to security agencies to secure the remaining female students of the Federal University Gusau in northwest Zamfara State was contained in a statement Sunday by the presidency. Tinubu condemned the kidnapping, saying there is no moral justification for such heinous acts against these innocent victims. He also promised the families that all the girls would be rescued and the perpetrators would pay. Zamfara State Police spokesperson Yazid Abubakar told VOA by phone Monday that security agencies are heeding the president's order.
Now on ground, we are able to rescue seven of them. An effort is ongoing to rescue the others. Our security has been deployed everywhere. Normalcy has been restored. Students are even in their lecture rooms. All hands are on deck to make sure that such incident did not occur again.
Eyewitnesses say scores of gunmen on motorbikes attacked a rented facility housing three female hostels early Friday and took away dozens of students. Police and school authorities say they have yet to determine the actual number of girls taken, but say seven rescued victims have been reunited with their families. The attack is the latest in a three-year wave of insecurity sweeping across northwest and central Nigeria. The incident triggered an online campaign dubbed Bring Back Our Fugus Girls. The campaign slogan is similar to a 2014 movement, Bring Back Our Girls, or BBOG, which spread across the world after more than 270 schoolgirls were abducted by Boko Haram militants in the town of Chibok in northeastern Borno State. Activist Abba Abios Roni is one of the campaigners on X, formerly known as Twitter. He accuses the authorities of not being proactive.
The first person to blame is the government. As I see in the report, it is almost about 50 motorists. 50 motorists is something huge that the government can easily identify or tackle before they even take the student.
Kidnapping for ransom is a major problem in Nigeria. Fixing it was one of Tinubu's campaign promises. He also faces serious economic challenges that he has been trying to address through policy reforms. Nigeria is also mired in a protracted war with Islamic militants lasting more than 14 years in the northeastern region, while violence from separatists have rattled the southeast. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The acting president of Zambia's main opposition patriotic front, the PF party, says President Hakainde Hichilema is paranoid about the public appearances of former President Edgar Lungu. This after police warned the former president against jogging in public. Lungu usually jogs on Saturdays and is usually joined by the public, but the police say he should first seek permission because his jogging disrupts the daily lives of citizens. The Zambian police declined a VOA request for an interview, but sent a statement. Patriotic Front Party acting president Gavin Lumbida tells me that the warning against jogging could be one of the worst decisions by the government.
President Edgar Chagwa Lungu undertakes public visitations and public actions without necessarily announcing that he's going to undertake any public outing. He undertakes those public outings as any other citizens would. When he goes on his Saturday jogging, he does not invite anyone to come and join him. People spontaneously join him. How then would any sane person expect that President Lungu should know the number of people who come, should know where they will join him from, should know how long they will run with him for him to seek the police's approval? When President Edgar Lungu goes to church, he does not ask others to join him in church. He goes to church because he knows that there are other congregants already in church.
I have a statement from the police also saying that when the former president jogs, the people that come with him create traffic problem for the police or for the public.
You know, in any country that has sensible leaders, there are two things that ought to be done with regard to former presidents. First is to worry about the security of the former president. Secondly is to manage the crowd that surrounds the former president. And you do that because you want to ensure that the former president enjoys his liberties as former president and as a citizen. And yes, if the police have noticed that the jogging of the president is inviting too many people who are disturbing the flow of traffic, isn't it the duty of traffic police to go out there and make sure that they control the crowd for them to allow the easy flow of traffic? And they know that President Edgar Lungu jogs every Saturday, so they know the day when this event takes place. And they can prepare themselves to go and provide security to the former head of state, because he also requires security.
The other aspect of it is that the government might think that the former president is using his jogging as a political venue, because they think there's a possibility he might run again for president.
And that is where lies the issue. That is the actual corn on the foot of President Hagainde Hichilema. All these other things they're talking about are superficial. The truth of the matter is that Hagainde Hichilema is spending sleepless nights over the name of Edgar Chagwa Lungu. Hagainde Hichilema is paranoid. He's a scared little man. And every time he hears that Edgar Lungu has been in the public and he has been received by the people warmly, it gives him frenzies. It sends him to a paranoia. Hagainde Hichilema is totally paranoid. He is fearing his own shadow, and in the process, fearing just the mention of the name Edgar Chagwa Lungu.
Kevin Lubinda is the acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ugandan opposition leader Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, has called on the international community to stand with the people of Uganda as they fight to secure minimal freedoms, without which, he says, the 2026 elections will be meaningless. Wine was the National Unity Platform Party candidate in the 2021 presidential election. This month, the Ugandan police suspended Wine's mobilization tour on the grounds it was being used to incite violence and promote sectarianism. Wine is visiting the United States this week and spoke with us about the purpose of his visit.
Thank you very much for having me, James, and good morning, Africa. Greetings wherever you are. I came to the United States to attend an event. There was an organized concert of myself and my singing partner, Nubian Lee, and we had a small concert in Los Angeles featuring and meeting to discuss with the Ugandans that live in Los Angeles. However, I also used this opportunity to have a few interviews and communications before I return back home to lawlessness.
How would you describe the political situation at home now?
The situation back home is deplorable. We are facing a lawless, military regime, which has been in power for 37 years now. but getting more lawless by the day, shrinking the political space and grossly abusing human rights of the citizens.
How is your party preparing for the next election?
We are not just preparing for the next election, but we are trying to secure the minimal freedoms that are guaranteed by the law, although constantly under attack by the state. That is the only way we can even get to speak about the next election, because if we don't secure these basic human rights, if we don't secure the minimal democratic principles, then it would be unnecessary for us to talk about the next election, because even in 2021, we won clearly and outrightly, but because of the lawlessness, because of disregard of democracy and the rule of law and human rights, the vote was rigged and we are where we are now. So we want the world to stand with the people of Uganda now, not in 2026, but now, to make sure that we can even make sense of 2026.
So, Honorable, the police recently suspended your tours. Any comment?
That is not the police. That is Museveni. It is unfortunate that our institutions have been captured by an individual and his family. You know, the police did not cite any law to ban my public meetings. The Inspector General of Police cited a law which was declared null and void by the Constitutional Court 15 years ago. They are just scared of the mass awakening of the people, and that is why they want to make sure we don't converge as the people.
The police were accusing you of using sectarian remarks to remove President Museveni's legitimate government. What's your comment?
Well, just like there is reverse racism in America and many other parts of the world where those who talk about it are criticized, but those that practice it are not criticized. It is the same situation back in Uganda. General Museveni is running a sectarian government where first it's members of his own family, his own bloodline, his own clan, and then only by extension is his tribe that are occupying majority of the places of control and governance. This is known. This is an open secret in Uganda. And he has successfully intimidated people not to talk about it. I just defied him and I spoke about it, you know, openly.
Ugandan opposition leader Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, he was speaking with us from Los Angeles, California. Liberian rice stakeholders are attending a two-day symposium to brainstorm strategies towards making the country self-sufficient in the popular cereal. Denise Nipson has more from Monrovia.
The Liberian government and its partners opened the two-day rice symposium on Monday named and Start Getting Rice Right. The World Bank says rice consumption makes up about 20% of Liberia's diet. For decades, Liberia has struggled to grow its staple food, rice, resulting in an influx of imported rice on the Liberian market, making it difficult to regulate. The conference aims at addressing the challenges and identifying policy and strategic reforms for the rice sector, focusing on scientific and innovative approaches to boosting the value chain. Agriculture Minister Jenny Cooper, in her address, stressed the need to be definite about rice production.
Let's get intentional about rice production, not just cultivation, not just growing it, because we can grow it, you will not be able to eat what we grow unless we harvest it properly, store it, dry it, process it, transport it, market it, and get it to the consumers. We want to hear from everybody.
The Food and Agriculture Organization says that in 2022, Liberia imported about 350,000 tons of rice. It produced about 288,000 tons of paddy rice. But investors think that amount can be boosted. The United States Agency for International Development, USAID, was represented by Joe Bayou, the deputy officer of the agency's economic growth office. He sees political will as a means to advance the rice sector.
Today, we are so excited that the ministry has taken the lead to move this sector forward. And we want to applaud the ministry through the able leadership of Mrs. Cooper for taking the lead. For quite a long time, we have talked about the political will, and we want to say thank you that the government is now taking the leadership in that direction.
Sabondo, the manager of the largest rice producer now in Liberia, Mokona River Rice Farm and Agricultural Services, says the lack of funding is the problem.
This is why we are fighting hard to disprove what other people or the ideology that people always bring up, that Liberia cannot feed himself. And with our intervention, what we have been doing, what we have been showing, it is proving from me that we can produce our own local rice, that we can feed ourselves.
Amos Bima, a rice vendor in central Monrovia, says he prefers locally grown rice.
I prefer our own country rice to be on the market, in the sense that it has more protein more than the importing rice.
Agriculture Minister Cooper says the stakeholders will also examine the features of Liberia's rice ecosystem with an eye to optimizing private sector involvement and investments in rice production. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
The charity group Mercy Corps is helping rural communities in Kenya preserve their ranch lands and protect themselves against the impact of climate change. Ahmed Hussein reports from Wajir County, Kenya.
Osman Rashid shows us the spot where his livestock died after a long drought in Eldas, a constituency in Wajir County in Kenya's northeast.
I had 100 goats, but now I have only 10. The long drought has wiped out all our livestock.
The Kenyan government says the country's arid regions are home to over 70% of the nation's livestock, a sector that provides about 80% of household incomes in nomadic communities. But due to a long drought, these communities have lost over 5 million livestock. The aid group Mercy Corps is hoping to help. It has launched a geographic information system, or GIS, to help local leaders and residents identify ways their land can be used during both dry and rainy seasons. The program, called Arid and Semi-Arid Lands Adapt, or ASAL Adapt, aims to protect rangelands against the impact of climate change. Abdi Fattah Dakane is the ASAL Adapt program manager for Mercy Corps Kenya. He told VOA in an interview.
It's a program that brings convergence of communities and county governments together so that they have that conversation around sustainable natural resource management using digital tools and services. So we are specifically using geographical analysis and climate services.
Officials say the goal is to make rural communities in Wajir and Garissa counties more resilient to climate change by managing their rangelands more effectively. Dr. Kuno Abdi is the country director for Mercy Corps Kenya.
This is in two perspectives. One is institutionalization for sustainability of the framework itself to hand over from Mercy Corps-led initiative to a more governmental-mandated agency. And to the second point is for Mercy Corps strategically. This is the way we do business, that it is locally led and it's within the localization agenda, that the government is the local institution that will remain beyond the project.
During the Africa Climate Summit in Nairobi this month, leaders called for action against climate change. Wajir County Governor Ahmed Abdullahi announced the GIS technology.
This system is not just a technological innovation, it's a commitment to better governance, to better informed decisions, and the improved well-being of our people.
Mercy Corps plans to expand the GIS program this year in the counties of Garissa, Turkana and Samburu. Ahmed Hussein for VOA News, Wajir County, Kenya.
And that's it for this Tuesday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.